Welcome to the Media Week podcast, the podcast made for media people by media people. I'm Beau Jackson, media editor at Campaign, and I will be stepping in today as your usual Media Week hosts are busy preparing for Media 360, coming up on the 21st and 22nd of May. Unleashing creativity is one of the four themes explored in the Media 360 programme this year, and in anticipation of the panels we have coming up, this episode is a creativity special to get you up to speed on some of the latest trends and topics that will be covered at the event. Generative AI's creative potential and media executions to admire, from luxury to the Stanley Cup's enviable case study, are all on the agenda. So it's over to Bucky, Charlie, Harriet and Jack from here. Enjoy!
Before we kind of go into it, a definition of generative AI is artificial intelligence that can develop a wider variety of collateral, including things like text, images, audio, code, chat box, video, search, gaming data. And with that, there are lots of ways that we can leverage it in the media industry. But the landscape is complex and it's just cluttered with vendors and startups. Now, arguably, ChatGPT has been the biggest traction recently, and it's been gaining a lot of headlines in the press. Now, Charlie, you've been using ChatGPT a lot, so we're interested to hear from you on this one. How are you actually using it in your day-to-day? Tell us a bit about what you're doing.
Well, obviously, I started by adding it on my LinkedIn page. That's the most important thing to do before you start using it. Otherwise, you'll get called a fraud. And then from there, like, it's been really useful, I guess, for building like keywords lists. So, you know, I don't necessarily know all the. I had a really sexy one today about gut health that I had typed in, you know, keywords around gut health, and gave me sort of some good contextual cues there. There's a lot more applications that I haven't actually fully used.
Is that just a bit of a thesaurus?
I don't know.
Of sorts.
Well, because I guess it's quite wide ranging. You know, you don't just want to focus on the physiology. You want to look at the symptoms. Okay. And we can get into this if you want.
No, you're okay.
But yeah, I think there's even uses of like people being able to look at, you know, how to write a delicate email, something that you thought AI could never do, like that always needs a human touch. But seeing people do that, you know, things like consumer trends, trying to get a real overview of, you know, what's out there at the moment about the hottest tech trends, for example. So I think it is really interesting. I think AI has sort of always been with us in a way, you know, from Gmail writing the first few lines of your email to, you know, like a bidding algorithm in, say, a DSP. I think what's maybe different here is almost the endless possibility of a search bar that you can start putting sort of just natural language into. So yeah, I think it's definitely an exciting area that people don't really seem to necessarily know how to use yet.
So I don't need to start worrying that instead of you taking me out for lunch, I'm going to have to sit and talk to ChatGPT instead, which you've briefed to keep me occupied.
It would probably be more fun.
Between, yeah, I might still need to send the delivery voucher for you, but you can just be sat there, you know, 2 hours blocked out, eating your dumplings and chatting to ChatGPT.
Me and ChatGPT. What? So do we know, what does Chat... I should probably have researched this before this, but what does GPT stand for?
Don't worry, we've got researchers on hand.
Generative performance technology.
Generative pre-trained transformer.
There we go.
Because it reacts to like sort of everything that you sort of feed it, right? And it just kind of responds from the internet and then kind of spits things out. So it's not actually like sentient. We haven't reached like the singularity. So we don't actually kind of like at this point, I'm actually like lots of people are quite concerned about what it means for, you know, are you going to be able to just ask it to write a media plan that will deliver objective X, Y, and Z, like give me the perfect kind of fame building media plan. And it's like, I imagine it will probably get to the point where it can give you something, but whether or not that will be like the right thing, particularly for each client, will be something entirely different. And I think it's like, if you could figure out a way of using it to supplement what you're doing from planning perspective, then it's only going to make you better in the same way that a calculator makes you better at maths.
That's interesting, because I know the performance marketing world did a podcast on this quite recently. And one question mark they had was on brand safety and suitability of it. Mm. And discussing kind of around, I suppose, are we running before we're walking with it? But in terms of how we could use it in the long term, one of the guest speakers said it will really change the skills that we have in the long run, but it can be used positively for us in regards to research tools, things like data and analytics, and just allowing the crafting of dynamic content, comms and services, really. So there's a variety of ways that we can use it in the right way. I just think perhaps in the long term, it will evolve.
Yeah, I mean, we're like at the Stevenson's rocket phase right now, and it's like, you know, there's a long time before we get to like the Shinkansen bullet train, but like, do you know what I mean?
No, you're looking at me no one knows what you mean.
What, do you not know what the Shinkansen bullet train is?
If you're here for the mechanical engineering podcast,
it's the bullet train in Japan.
I'm so glad you said that.
Anyway, look, so Stevenson's rocket, old steam engine,
as old
bullet
as
train,
your chat,
super fast, hundreds of miles an hour. Okay, I'm going full Francis Bourgeois now.
ChatGPT.
Yeah, ChatGPT. It's just like a train.
So we are actually already seeing some people looking at like what it's going to do. There has actually been a study done recently by MIT actually looking at like how is it changing what people do. So they saw that on average, the quality of work done versus a control was actually 18% better when using ChatGPT, and actually done 60% quicker as well. So it is quite scary at that stage, sort of understanding that. The big thing as well, it also made the sort of gap in skills. So if you were maybe a lower skilled worker, you were like to be graded much closer. So people who had less skills were much more helped by it. So I guess as sort of managers, like, would you be worried if you walked over to one of your sort of direct reports screen and they had it open?
Ooh. No, because that's literally happening at work at the moment. Someone on the team is using it to write captions for social posts, because we're managing a client's social feed at the moment, which is a bit of a new one for us. But rather than sort of churning out, you know, loads and loads of captions ourselves, just way quicker to ask ChatGPT to do it. And it's like probably not going to give you like the Bernini fountain of Facebook captions or posts, but it's going to give you something passable really quickly. And then you can kind of go back and edit it yourself rather than kind of just starting from scratch and staring at the blinking cursor or whatever. So I'm like, if you're using it and you're using it in a way that's making you better, then why not?
I do like that, because everything we do, there's a tool for that now.
Yeah.
Things that it used to take 100 interns or 100 execs to do can be done by one exec, because there's a tool to help them with that, save time, blah, blah, blah. However, I think the reliance that we're getting, and like you say, the difference is going to have, or the difference is going to make on people's output, is if our execs aren't sat there churning out different ad copy, where's that creativity going? Are they going to have that base level of insight to be able to actually understand what they're putting out for the client? I don't think so. They're just going to end up churning it out, picking a couple. We're going to go back and say, this is trash, because they haven't bothered to check it. But it has freed them up for more time to do other things. So I think it is interesting. I think it could help in some aspects, but we have to be very careful that we don't eradicate our abilities and a lot of other things, because otherwise it will start to take over us and we won't be needed for anything. If it can just do that, the client can just do that and pick their own, and then they don't need me.
The robots will take over. Bookie Jack and Charlie, I want you to provide me with your favourite activations this year within luxury, automotive, food and beverage and tech.
Kick off with a luxury thing.
Okay, go for it, Boots.
Okay, so the brand that I'm backing at the minute is Burberry. I think Burberry are absolutely killing the game right now. So what they've done this part of the year, or I think it started at the 1st of Feb, was a Harrods takeover. And people are going to come for me and tell me, it's not me, Leanne, it's not me. I don't care. Anyway, so basically they did a Harrods takeover. They basically put the whole thing into their main colour, which is called Night Blue. They've had like events and stuff at Harrods. They've got the celebrity endorsers and the influencers there. Who was there? They had Naomi Campbell, Anna Wintour, Joanna Lumley, Jordan Dunn, who is in Love Island, Lennon Gallagher, Olivia Colman. So lots of different types of people, different ages, different rages. So that kind of takes care of their existing audience. They know what's coming. They like that kind of stuff. But they then recreated that entire thing in Roblox. So they built Harrods in Roblox. They made it look exactly like it does in real life, just to kind of reach out to the younger audience, which I really like. So I think the media, the earned media that they've gained alone is massive. Loads of premium publishers are just picking up the fact that they're doing this dual activation. And then the online retargeting strategy, because obviously I'm doing a little bit of research. What am I looking at nowadays? Bare Burberry. And it looks very nice. If my bank balance wanted to just, you know, then I might buy some, but not today. Either way, I think they're doing really well at that. but also that it's a continuation. It's not their first activation in Roblox. They've done that two or three times already. They've activated in within Minecraft. They also ran a collaboration with a company that supported female esports players and stuff like that. So I feel like they are stealthily getting into the gaming space, and they're not screaming, they're not shouting, they're not really being too boisterous about it. But in like 2 years' time, they will have a solid footprint in that space, and all the gamers will be stepping out in Burberry, and everyone will be like, why do gamers prefer Burberry? This is why.
Nice.
This is why. So I like what they're doing. It's quiet, it's silent, and it's absolutely gonna, I think, be lucrative for them.
Nice. So that's a really good luxury example. Charlie, what do you have?
So I've got a bit of tech for you. So the Samsung 24 launch, it was launched across basically every channel possible. And it kind of continued on Samsung's general AI theme that they had last year. So the phone picked it up with a Google-powered circle-to-search capability, which is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. You can like circle a dog, it'll tell you the breed, circle a piece of clothing, you can then shop for it. So they did some pretty cool stuff alongside it. They had an out-of-home takeover of, guess what? The Circle Line. They also did an out-of-home takeover, the Alternet, which is that really cool, like, immersive space down by Tottenham Court Road. And they had, like, an embargo on all media until this unpackaging event. Like, they did a live unpackaging on the phone. And then after that, all the media went live. So they had, like, cinema roadblocks, broadcaster roadblocks, all sorts of pretty cool stuff. And as an outcome, I'm led to believe they had a record number of pre-orders as a result of the campaign. So like a multi-channel extravaganza with tangible results.
Sick. Nice.
I love that. It was sick. I saw it at Black Friday, actually, some of their takeover. It was nice.
Nice. Okay, that was another great tech example. Mm-hmm. Now, Jack, you've got automotive, FMCG, or food and beverage. What are you going to go for?
I have a couple. So food, but they're mostly food and beverage focused, because that's essentially all I think about.
Hence the Huel adverts.
Maybe that's why.
It's working.
But it's also why it won't work. Oh, little hand touch there. It's also why it won't work on me, because I just enjoy I just enjoy eating too much. Anyway, we're giving Huel too much airtime. So the first one I wanted to talk about is, again, I'm just going to be like, you know what's coming here, because it's like one of my regular tracks that I just go back to. But like, great example of how planning for notice and frequency is kind of going to give you, bring you continued success. Lucky Saints campaign over the course of January. I think we're probably all predisposed to see it slightly more because, you know, they're all over the underground and we all use the underground all the time. But the thing that I really liked about the campaign was the fact that they went back with the same creative that they used last time. And I think there's a real tendency for brands to be kind of lured into changing their creative every single time that they go live. The thing is, Lucky Saint have, you know, really January is like their Christmas. That's when people are kind of easing off the drink, and it's when they can get most people to kind of try them for the first time. By using the same campaign artwork that they used last time, it meant that you're tapping into that latent kind of memory structure, which is lying dormant since people saw it last time. I mean, I can't remember who off the top of my head did the photography for it as well, but they've obviously got like really kind of beautiful imagery. It's got great copy in the form of like Lead Us Not Into Temptation and Rejoice and all this kind of like weird sort of religious angle with like the saint thing. But I think from a media standpoint, it's an example of just really good out of home planning. So you obviously like they've got the kind of good blend of smaller and larger formats, but all with the kind of the same themes running throughout. For me, I'm looking at it and going, right, the next step for them is surely to introduce like some kind of video creative in there. It's, you know, I mean, I'm kind of biased, but it's just the sort of thing where you see it, you look at it and go, if you built something for telly to accompany that, or even to play it out across VOD, you're going to see like, they're going to see insane results off the back of that, because they're just kind of doing this really good brand build. I just think, you know, that it's hard to get beverage companies in particular to, you know, to invest that kind of scale of money, but I'm fairly sure that it would work for them.
Great. Do you know what I'm really loving about these examples? They've all included out of home, which just goes to show traditional media wins.
Yeah, they really did, actually.
I mean, well, also, hey, like, you know, a really good example of that is at the moment, all over the tube, you've got Snapchat ads. like all the tech companies use traditional media when they want to get their point across, like the TikTok TV campaign that went out. Mm-hmm. Whenever Facebook wants to make a big statement, they buy print, you know, because they're trying to get to that like kind of decision maker audience or whatever that may be slightly older.
I think
like,
they want to look serious as well. Like, I think there's something as people, if we see something like immortalized in print or on out of home, we're like, oh.
Legit.
Do you know what? You know, with print though, you only have to look at how much the grocers spend with print every week to know that actually it does work. But it's just like, it's not a particularly sexy channel. So people just go like, you know, because planners are, I think planners are inherently lazy, like in a lot of ways. They won't necessarily give it much thought because they don't consume it. Mm-hmm. Think about print, people. It's good.
Think about print.
So what actually is the Stanley Cup, first of all? Well, to set the scene, and for those that don't know, for over 100 years, the Stanley brand has been marketed to kind of workers and outdoorsmen. But with the help of creators, the company has reached an untapped audience. So the Stanley Cup craze has took a $70 million company to a $750 million company in just 3 years. And this is really the kind of case study that we'd all dream about producing for our clients. So tell us a bit about what happened and what your view is.
So I think, if I'm right, the CEO of Crocs went to Stanley, or the CMO, I think it might be the CMO, they went from Crocs and basically have been applying a lot of like the same ideas that have driven Crocs from being this sort of like hideous shoe that no one actually really liked to being like a sort of a cult status object. But they also like, they've been really smart at reacting to stuff really fast. Obviously they've like, TikTok has done them an absolute favor, basically. But like, did you see where there was someone's car like burnt out, mm-hmm. and the Stanley Cup survived the fire, and then when they opened it up, there was still ice in the cup. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
And then didn't Stanley
replaced the car. See, that's so smart. Like from a comms standpoint, it's like, boom, PR smash. That's a home run.
Yeah, what Stanley done has been absolutely, because they're the same people who make the Stanley knives, right? That's the only shit that I know.
Do they make Stanley knives as well?
Yeah, because like, the cup was all about like Stanley. It was like you say, construction
workers. They
should do
them
workers.
In like pink and green.
Exactly. And that would be fantastic. I'd love one of those. Yeah. So yeah, when I was reading into it, my take on this, I think, yeah, Jack, what you said is bang on. That was a huge component of their rise. But it was just this willingness to engage with the micro communities that are literally like building at the bottom of social media. Yeah. So obviously they did engage different influencers. I think they had Carrie Underwood. They had one of the women from Orange is the New Black. Mm. They had another country singer and stuff like that. So they did like limited edition bottles with them. So obviously using them as influencers. I think they also did a Starbucks collab They did like Valentine's Day editions and stuff like that. But they worked with a company called The Buy Guide, who just listed them initially. Uh-huh. And then when they saw it was doing so well, Stanley got in touch with them and helped them like buy up a bunch and sell on. And all of a sudden, they ended up pitching different influencers, like low-level influencers, to test it and try it and test it and try it. And so you ended up having user-generated content, mm-hmm. explosion of different people just being like, it can't be as good as everyone's saying.
Yeah.
And before you know it, it's become part of meme culture.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hideous, by the way. They look awful.
Like, I personally think they look very unpractical.
Well, yeah, with a big impractical. Impractical.
But you're totally right, Buki, because they have a dedicated fan base on Twitter. So, you know, things like unboxing and product reviews, gaining millions and millions of views. Mm-hmm. And obviously, in turn, it's helping make the company even more profitable. But what I'm interested in is, obviously, this is a really good example of how a brand has almost reinvented itself to tap into a probably more female-focused audience. But what other brands do we know about that has done something very similar? The first one that came to mind for me is Dickies.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wouldn't say on the same scale. Yeah, I wouldn't say on the same scale, but they did something fairly similar.
Yeah.
It was a workman's kind of builder, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. original clothing brand that then suddenly kind of extended its positioning and appeal to a younger, trendier audience.
Yeah, people like me sit at a computer but want to look like they actually do a proper job. With their hands like a man.
I'm so glad I wasn't wearing my Dickie shirt today. I wore it yesterday, guys. Oh.
There we go. See, so any others you can think of?
Do you think Dyson sits in here with the whole air wrap curl thingy?
Mate, like, it's mad how people want like a Hoover brand to be like near their hair.
I don't know how they did that. That was crazy.
I tell you what. I love. I mean, like, they're just going off on a tangent now, but I love Dyson for changing the world of hand dryers. Do you remember drying your hands in like the 90s?
Jarring.
It used to suck.
I just didn't.
It's like zip, zip.
I just didn't. I just went wet hands. Just let air dry. Fuck that shit, man.
Back to the point. The thing that I love about this is like, it's an example of how if you've got an empowered marketing team that is free to kind of make their own decisions and pivot based on what's happening in real time, you're going to see so many more rewards rather than having, you know, some businesses are set up where like everything must be rubber stamped by the CEO. And it's like, you're trying to turn the QE2 every time you want to make a decision. You're never going to be able to jump on like a TikTok trend that's here today and gone tomorrow.
Exactly. I think it's just a huge case in point for anyone trying to get, you know, clients to relinquish a bit of control, because that's the problem here. When you are controlling, you know, the message, then that everything, as you say, you just don't get the opportunity to react and you don't get the opportunity to capitalize when everyone else is backing your brand and you're just there like, wait, hang on, I have 70,000 approvals to do and then we can go out with a response.
I mean, I think also like there's such a, yeah, like it's a bravery thing. There's such an opportunity for particularly junior people at agencies who have like a bit of contact with the client. You know, when you see things popping off on TikTok or like there's something new developing and you think about like how that might be relevant to your client, have ideas about it, because you can just, you know, you should just put them to them. I think people are afraid of having ideas sometimes. Yeah.
Well, I think it's obviously, in essence, an example of a really well-executed strategy, specifically using social and user-generated content to accelerate the buzz. A really well-executed strategy that we could learn a lot from.
Absolutely. Everyone could learn a lot from.
Anyway, that wraps up today's episode. If you like what you heard, like and subscribe and keep submitting Media Anons. We love to hear your goss. Bye.